Hello, everyone. Greetings and welcome to the Delta Flyers with Tom and Harry as we journey through episodes of Star Trek Voyager. Your two hosts along this journey are my fellow Voyager actor, Garrett Wong, who in 1998 played Troy Tashima in the film 100%. Myself, your favorite helmsman, Robert Duncan McNeil. Remember, you can get the full version of this podcast and lots more bonus material by signing up to become a patron at patreon.com/the Delta Flyers. Well, hello there, sir.
Hello. If you recall from the last episode we did of the Delta Flyers.
Yes.
You did the intro then as well. And you gave yourself, you said, me, Robert Duncan McNeil, Robert Dean. Let's go through everything that you've been called. Because I asked about that last. I said, let's go through every iteration of your nicknames throughout your life. So as a kid, were you ever Robert from your parents?
Only
ever?
If I was in trouble, I was Robert.
Okay. Otherwise, it was Robbie. Okay.
When I first started acting professionally, I briefly was Duncan McNeil.
That's right.
Duncan. People called me Duncan.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I was Dunkin' Donuts as a kid.
Were you ever Rob?
I'm Rob sometimes still, but
really?
Not often.
Who calls you Rob?
People don't know me very well. And sometimes I'll introduce myself to strangers. Like if I'm at Starbucks and they say, what name do you want? I'll just
You'll say Rob.
Because it's easy.
It's
they don't
fast. If I,
yeah, yeah. Rob.
Okay. Rob.
Easy for them to write. I get my coffee quicker. It's great.
Okay.
Ethan Phillips calls me Robbie D.
Robbie D.
I get that a lot. RDM, I'll get a lot. McDunk, I'll get from my friend Steve Caffrey.
Mm-hmm. Is there anyone that just says McNeil to you?
Yeah, you.
Besides me, other than me.
Some people say McNeil.
Hey, yeah? McNeil. Yeah. You get that a little bit?
Okay. Yeah.
All right.
I think that's it. Let's get back to Troy Tashima. 1998, 100%.
Yeah, let's get back.
This was in the middle of our show, right?
It was.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Yeah, this was an independent film from a director who I'd worked with when he was filming his USC graduate thesis film. Yeah. It was a project called Angry Cafe, and I got cast as the lead for that. It was a short film.
Right,
and,
right.
So basically, Eric Koyanagi, the writer-director of Angry Cafe, the USC short film that I did, he went on to do this feature-length film called 100%, and he pretty much brought everyone from the crew that he did Angry Cafe with, so all his fellow classmates from the USC School of Film and Television, to work on 100%. And I played the role of Troy Tashima. It's a story of three friends who are living in Los Angeles, three Asian-American friends in different walks of life. And it was myself, Dustin Nguyen from 21 Jump Street, another well-known Asian-American actor.
Right.
And also one of the Bosco brothers, actually, I think two of them worked on 100%. But my character, there's a monologue in there where he trashes on Sulu from the original series, saying he never got the woman, he never got the gal, he did this, that, he was sort of just a secondary character, this and that.
Right.
And I actually refused to say that because I was filming Voyager at the time. I was like, look, guys, I'm not going to trash Star Trek while I'm working on Star Trek. And they were like, yeah, but that's what makes this line hilarious. And silly me, I stuck to my guns. And in hindsight, if I had to do it all again, I would say, heck yeah, let me bag into
it. Have fun with it.
Exactly.
The fans would have loved that.
And I want to thank you. You and a couple other Voyager members showed up to the screening of 100%.
I remember that.
Yeah, it was at the DGA, I think, is where they had it. So thank you for showing up for that. But it was a fun film. But that can be found. I think that's available online somewhere.
I bet it is.
100% the film.
Yeah, I bet you can find it on Amazon or Apple TV or something like that.
Yeah. And this week's episode is
Lineage. Lineage. Yes.
All right.
Yes.
Super excited about this episode.
Let's go watch it. And we'll come back and we will recap and give you our thoughts on Lineage.
Sounds good.
For our Patreon patrons, stick around for your bonus material.
Well, 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 looky who we have as our guest for the recap, for the entire recap.
You said Roxanne looky. Dawson. You said like looky. No, fine. It's good. It's looky. Looky who we have.
Well, let's welcome our wonderful colleague from Star Trek Voyager, Roxanne Dawson. Thank you, Roxanne.
Hey, guys.
Hey, Rox.
Y'all looking good.
Oh, you know, you looking good.
Yes, you're looking good.
You look better than both of us combined. So, all right, let's start right off with this beginning of this episode. Let's jump right into it and let us do our poetry synopsis.
Yes.
Okay. So here is my haiku for Lineage, which will be followed by Robbie's limerick for Lineage. Limerick for Lineage. I like that. All right, here we go. My haiku for Lineage.
Yes. Can't wait.
Pregnant. B'Elanna, the past returns to haunt her. Proton saves Ridges. Get it? You're Captain Proton. You save the Ridges. Saves Ridges.
Yes.
The Ridges on, you know, your baby girl. There you
Proton
go.
Proton saves Ridges.
Yes.
It sounds like a catchphrase from a commercial. Proton saves Ridges.
It does, but for a potato chip commercial.
Yes,
not for,
exactly.
You know,
something okay. like that.
Not the Ruffles.
Route. Yeah, it's like Ruffles have Ridges. It's sort of the
Proton saves Ruffles is what I should have said.
Yes.
Dadgummit. Okay.
All right.
Let's hear limerick
time. Limerick time.
I love your limerick. Let's go.
Here we go.
Yeah.
I got to loosen up.
Okay. Yeah, loosen up, man. Okay.
B'Elanna and Tom get a family upgrade, a new baby, but B'Elanna's a bit afraid. As a child traumatized, she wants some DNA revised. Then she learns. All perfect, just the way we're made.
Wow, look at that.
There's your limerick.
Yeah.
Limerick synopses.
What do you think of that, Roxanne?
Roxanne.
That. You like that limerick? You like the haiku?
I am so impressed with both of these. I can't even tell you.
All right, so let's go through these guest stars that we have on this show. Juan Garcia, who played John Torres, father of B'Elanna Torres in the flashback scenes. And his first credit that I could find was the 1989 film, The Banker. We also have a really talented young actress playing young B'Elanna. That's Jessica Gaona, I think. I don't know if that's the correct pronunciation. Roxanne, can you help me on that? Gaona. Do you remember how she pronounced
I
that
don't.
Name?
Gaona.
Yeah. Gaona is the last
it
name.
It sounds right. Yeah.
Gaona. Okay. Gaona. Playing young B'Elanna, very first credit was an episode of ER in 1994.
Oh, wow. ER, is she still acting, did you find?
No, I don't think she is. Yeah, but I felt she did a great job. So
she was great. Did you meet her, Roxanne? Did you ever meet her?
I don't think I did.
I wouldn't think so.
In fact, I think the first time that I saw any of those scenes was when the show aired.
Okay.
How funny.
I wasn't there when it was all shot.
So. Mm-hmm. Well, let me continue with our stars. Okay. Javier Grajeda played Carl. Mm-hmm. And very first credit for Javier would be a feature film called One from the Heart from 1981. So that's a while back. Javier.
Kind of a big flop is what that was. But
wasn't
One from
you
the Heart
that
wasn't it the musical in Vegas or something?
Oh my goodness.
It was like Francis Ford Coppola. Was that One from the Heart? I think that was the movie.
Is it?
Are you sure?
Maybe. I don't know.
I feel like One from the Heart was that big Francis Ford Coppola musical that was
which flopped.
It's legendary if I'm thinking of the right movie.
Okay.
He was a part of that.
Yes.
Lucky guy.
Yeah, lucky guy. Paul Robert Langdon, who played the very mean little Dean. Dean, the little bully cousin.
But then he apologized.
He does apologize, but you know,
being a kid.
I mean, you don't stick worms on your cousin's sandwiches. That's just rude. That is just rude.
Unless your cousin is a bird and then giving them a worm sandwich is a really nice thing.
Yes, it's all context, isn't it? I mean, you have to look at it that way. Okay, very first credit, a 1995 film called My Family.
Oh,
My Family, which I think is a Francis Ford Coppola film,
what?
If I'm not mistaken.
Everybody started
which
their
is crazy.
As One from the Heart, really?
Well, not One from the Heart, but My Family, another film called My Family. So that's why I was wondering if Robbie was confusing that for One from the Heart. But if One from the Heart is his.
I had just looked it up. Yeah, you were right, Robbie. It's just, it was.
Was it?
Yeah.
It was Francis Ford Coppola's musical that was a big flop.
Oh my gosh.
I wish I was in that movie.
Okay. Well, this is crazy because Dean and Carl, the actors that played Carl and Dean, are both, their first credits were both Francis Ford Coppola films, which is insane.
Wow.
The budget from One from the Heart
was
$26 million, and its gross was $637,000.
Exactly.
This is in 1981. It was a $26 million film in 81.
Which, by the way, in 81, $26 million film was like a $300
million film now.
Million dollar
film right now, exactly.
It's huge.
$26 million in 81. Oh my gosh. Okay. Moving on. Nicole Sarah Fellows, who played Cousin Elizabeth. Cousin Elizabeth. I found the first credit to be kind of a tie. Alien Resurrection in 1997 and Mad City in 1997. So I think we have a feature film and a television credit. And finally, rounding out our guest stars, we have Gilbert R. Leal. Gilbert R. Leal played Michael, the other cousin. 1994, Touched by an Angel. Very first credit. Yeah, we all know that show.
We all do.
Okay. You want to talk about writer?
I want to talk about writer and director. James Caan.
Did we guess those right? Anything?
No, we
guessed
did
everything
not.
Wrong. Yeah.
Everything wrong. We guessed before we went and watched it, Roxanne. We guessed it who wrote and directed. Totally wrong.
Totally wrong.
James Caan wrote the script.
Right. And not the actor.
Not James the actor.
K-A-H-N. Like Madeline Caan spelling.
James Caan. I don't really remember James. He was a producer on our show the last season. But I think James had come and gone as a freelancer, and I don't know how he was connected. But our last season, James Caan was actually a supervising producer. So,
well, Roxanne, do you remember talking to him for this episode about this episode? No. Okay.
No, and I feel like I would have. That's a strange.
I know.
One.
Yeah,
I don't
which
know
is
he was around, and I was talking to somebody else about it because there's no way.
Yeah.
That I wouldn't have said.
Yeah, no, you would. Yes. Knowing Roxanne Dawson, every single avenue would have been explored, and nothing would have been unearthed by Roxanne Dawson. So yes, I really do feel like you did speak with James Caan, but you don't. You probably just don't recall that meeting, and because this is such a heavy character piece, this really is this character. No. I mean, it's you must have had a conversation.
How Roxanne did such detailed and thorough homework. We would come on set and I would see my script open with like maybe a word written here or there. And then I'd see Roxanne's script open and it had post-it notes and charts and graphs and
like PowerPoint presentation.
I mean, literally it was covered in thoughts and you would journal in these scripts and you would really work out a lot of detail that I still think about the kind of detail you did. And I mean that like very respectfully. No one else on our show did that kind of detail.
I think this is a side business for you, Roxanne. I think you can start a business teaching people how to direct and be thorough as a director. And it should be called No Stone Unturned by Roxanne Dawson. And you just show these people everything that you do.
I'll tell you now, as a director, when an actor walks onto the set with their scriptation and a million notes and all of this stuff, that's when I start to worry.
Right?
I go, I'm not going to be able to mold you, man.
No, you've got a lot of thoughts. You figured it out.
Oh, a lot of thoughts. Just add a half hour to this rehearsal.
That's funny.
That should be part of your audition process, Roxanne. The question should be, does this actor take a lot of notes beforehand and prepare? Because we don't want that. We want moldable actors on this project. Okay.
Okay. Right. Director. Director was Peter Lauritsen,
our supervising producer, right?
Our post-producer.
Post-producer.
So, yeah.
Is this his first one?
Yes.
No,
first one for
Voyager.
Us.
For us. Yeah.
Yeah.
I do remember that.
What do you remember from Peter directing you?
Yeah.
Well, I feel like we both talked about it and knew that we had a really good episode. You know, I felt it was super well written and but I know he was a bit nervous and excited and, you know, and also I think he did a great job and I feel like we communicated well. So, bravo to him. I think he did a great job.
I think he did a really great job.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too. Like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Robbie, do you even remember him directing? Because I don't. I honestly don't. The main thing I remember is, yeah. You know how the names on the buttons, there would be like Rick Berman would be Re-Burr, like R-I-B-E-R, the first two letters of the first name and the first three letters. And so the button that I pushed all the time at operations was Pelau, Peter Lauritsen, P-E-L-A-U. I pushed that button more than I pushed any other button. That's how I know Peter Lauritsen. He's a button to me. Okay?
I do remember Peter, the P-E-L-A-U.
Yeah, P-E-L-A-U.
Do you remember that, Roxanne?
I do. Oh, I remember all those buttons. Oh my God.
It looks Hawaiian the way it looks. It's like, the luau almost, right? So yeah, I pushed the luau button every time.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, Peter Lauritsen was our post production supervisor. As his full-time job, he was in charge of the editors, the sound mix, the color correction, the looping.
ADR people, looping.
ADR people. Yes. He supervised all of those people in post-production. Visual effects, mm-hmm. He was in charge of making sure those got through the process.
Yeah.
So he knew the show really, really well. But yeah, it was his first time directing, and this is a big episode for the first time.
Oh my God, huge.
Yeah. Let's jump into our story.
Go, Robbie.
Okay, so first thing happens, we see Voyager flying through space, mm-hmm. still in the Delta Quadrant. Yep. We go to a corridor, and there's Tom and B'Elanna. That's you and me, Rox. We're walking down the hall. We were young, weren't we? We were so young.
One of the first things that occurred to me was, oh my God, how young we are.
We were babies. Anyway.
Okay, go. Yeah.
I know. We were... But B'Elanna is unusually cheery. She's
chipper.
Super happy. Tom even says you're in such a good mood. She says another beautiful day in the Delta Quadrant. Mm-hmm. And one thing I noticed in that first hallway scene, there was a background person behind us.
Yes.
And that person, I was like, she did a really good reaction. I'm trying to remember her name. I couldn't at first. I think it was Erin.
Was it the blonde lady?
She would have a bun or something.
She reacted well.
But as B'Elanna says, oh, another beautiful day in the Delta Quadrant, that background person turned like they had never heard B'Elanna say a positive word. And it was really well done. Like, a lot of times our background just didn't react to anything. You know, the background would just be very stiff and stoic. And that was something I noticed in that scene. I was like, good for her.
Who is your first AD? Who was the first AD on this episode? Do we remember?
Who knows?
Because then that's the person that directs the background.
Yeah.
Isn't that person doing that? Yes.
Okay. Yeah, it would have been them. But anyway, it was just a little detail. I thought, you know, you and I, we were fine in the scene. We were good. But the thing that jumped at me was the background person was actually acting, like responding. I loved it.
Well, what jumped out to me is you guys don't typically have that much PDA going on, but you smooch right there in the hallways, ooh, which is kind of different for me, I felt.
Yeah.
Yeah, Roxanne, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, it was definitely different.
There was a lot of PDA. It's funny, fans ask me all the time, like, how is that? It must be weird, you know, kissing another person.
Your TV wife.
You're not really in a relationship with. I think you and I were very comfortable with any of that stuff.
Only my kids find it weird now when they watch it. They go, Mom,
you just kissed that guy. That's not
Eric. That about, you know, they're very funny when they watch stuff like that. That's funny.
It's funny because I don't know, maybe because I started like in the theater when I was a teenager doing musicals where you had to kiss somebody or something. It just never felt like
romantic or anything.
I never felt to me as an actor like, oh, there's something real happening here.
Yeah.
No offense, Roxanne, but you know what I mean? Like, do you know? Like, yes. It felt very comfortable. And
well, yeah. I think my first kiss when I was like, I don't even want to say how young I was like in a scene. I remember I had to like kiss a guy in a scene. And I'm going, I haven't really even kissed yet. And I was like, so I kind of began on the stage. Yes, it was so weird.
Your first kiss ever, Roxanne, was on camera? Is that correct?
No.
I was
on the stage doing a scene for a class.
Like, but that was your first really kiss in an acting class?
Well, in school, when we were like doing-
Like theater, like the drama-
Theater, drama class, you know?
Okay, fine.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow.
Your first kiss was in a that's how perfect is that? That's
I know. Amazing.
You guys even, well, would you, I think your kiss looked very natural and it looked good.
I think
guys are both good kissers. I'm assuming you both remember that both kissed well. Yes.
Well, we've been through so much already. I mean, even just personally, I was already given birth, right? We were both parents.
Yeah.
Time. And we started this whole thing out not knowing what it was like to be parents. And I think here we're doing an episode about becoming a parent. It was sort of like a, you know, wink, wink, like we just both went through that, you know? It's so funny.
Yeah.
We know exactly, you know, where we should be at that point.
Yes, that's true.
I don't want to forget to mention this, but at the end of watching this episode, Roxanne, it really resonated for me that the writers had written this sort of the conflict, the struggle that this couple had, Tom and B'Elanna, had over some of these issues of parenting and all that. A lot of these scenes echoed in my real life. Like, I'm like, oh, wow, I wonder if the writers were picking up vibes from me or you. Like, I feel like, how much did they write these characters based on us as real people that they were sort of absorbing? Or I don't know. It felt very familiar, some of the issues. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I was actually super impressed with us.
Yeah. We were not bad.
I went like, damn, we're good.
We were pretty good actors. I feel like I yelled at you too much.
Let's move it into engineering. Okay.
Thank
this
you,
is
Gary.
Really interesting because Roxanne comes in there and she grabs this pad.
You know, yes.
And she says, thank you. Nice job, Ensign. Then she looks at someone else and is like, hey, you keep the warp field that stable and you might just get us home a few years early. This to me was like a 50s sitcom. It was like, hi, hey, you know, and then Roxanne.
She was on happy pills. Yeah,
she was. And she sort of dances from station to station. She twirls like a ballerina. It was wonderful. So,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Roxanne, do you like that scene?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Crazy. Yeah. High and low. You get
it. The mood swings are about to hit.
Yes. Yeah. All right.
So next we go to the upstairs, which
the second level.
The second level in engineering, which we didn't shoot in often. It was a bit challenging to get the cameras and things up there. It was it always slowed us down. So whenever I saw a scene
in the second level
upstairs, I was like, oh great, it's gonna take twice as long.
Yeah, this is gonna be a long setup.
Yeah, right. But it was nice. We go upstairs. Icheb and Seven are there. They're working. Yeah.
Can we start a fund to like buy Icheb another outfit? It's the same.
Yeah, he's worn the same
thing.
Outfit for like 2 years now.
For 2 years. He doesn't have any other clothing. Okay.
Yeah. But they're working upstairs and B'Elanna arrives and suddenly her mood swings from the happiest Starfleeter on the ship to she's pretty pissed off. Didn't give Icheb permission to work there.
Yeah.
Seven says, well, I'm just helping him study warp mechanics.
Yeah, snarky. She's snarky. Yeah,
she's not happy. And gets kind of faint as she comes down the steps up there. She kind of falls into Seven, tries to walk, but she's a little dizzy. Icheb scans her. He says he's picking up
another life sign.
He thinks it could be a parasite.
It's
inside of her. He doesn't understand.
No.
She's being invaded by some alien life form. Seven looks at the scan. She's like, I know what this is. Calls the doctor. B'Elanna's like, what is it? What is this alien? Seven says, I think you may be pregnant.
Yes.
Bum, bum, bum. Yeah.
Huge.
I had forgotten this episode was about that. Roxanne, we don't look at this ahead of time.
We don't.
When we first come in, we
do our intro. We are completely cold.
We do an intro where we try to remember what, which we've done already. We try to remember what this episode was. I had no idea.
Right. All right. We're in sick bay. The doctor is examining Torres. And yes. I guess that fetus is already 7 weeks old, but everything's, you know, everything's good. Paris is concerned. Why did she faint? Doctor says, well, you know, Klingon human metabolism, sometimes they just, you know, they don't mesh. That's it. That's pretty much it. So the doctor keeps going through a briefing, Torres and Paris, about this upcoming pregnancy.
I love the moment where the doctor, where Bob says, well, you were planning to have a baby, right? And both of us look at each other. Yes, of course.
We weren't.
No, we actually, Roxanne, because she did all her homework with all those extensive notes, Roxanne's performance was believable. She covered. She's like, oh, yeah, of course.
Tom's performance
was so obviously lying.
Well, clearly in that scene, the only note you had on that paper was bagel, something like bagel. And then you get some bagels on the way home.
Bagels, that was my note to myself.
Get bagels for family. That's the only note you had.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah. Good job, though, Roxanne, in this scene.
Great job. I love that in this whole episode, Roxanne, your work with Bob also was really, really good. I think the two of you did some great work. Do you have any memories of this episode with Bob?
No, I do, actually. But I had forgotten that we made him the godfather at the end.
Yeah, I know. That was huge.
I went like, oh my God, that's like so cool.
Very touching scene too. My goodness. Yeah.
Yeah, it was really great. We also talk about this.
We need to jump to the end there.
No, that's all right. We jump all around.
That's all right. And we're done. We're done with the recap. Thank you, Roxanne. We love you.
We missed a couple things here. We did also talk in the scene about the doctor could tell us the sex of the baby at this point. One thing I noticed was Tom was like, yeah, yeah, let's tell us. He didn't ask.
B'Elanna doesn't want to know.
No, she doesn't want to know.
She doesn't want to know.
I can't imagine a husband just saying, yeah, tell us without going,
without
honey.
Consulting the wife.
He didn't consult her at all.
That's dangerous territory.
I apologize. That was very rude of me, Roxanne, to, without consulting
you. You're in the moment and you kind of assumed that I was like right there with you.
Yeah, but that was a little moment. I thought, oh, you could see the crack in this relationship forming already.
Beginning.
And why did I yell at you so much in this episode? I felt like I will get there.
No,
but
it's,
I like
it's
I
justified. It's the no. I don't think it was. The tone was right, Robbie. Trust me.
I should have been.
You're too critical. Let's keep moving.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Back in the corridor, another walk and talk.
Yeah. There's a lot of walk and talks with you too.
There are a lot of walk and talks.
Oh my gosh. It's unbelievable. Yeah.
We're talking Paris wants to maybe go to the holodeck for some child rearing programs. Mm-hmm. He wants to replicate an antique crib. I had a line where I said, maybe we can replicate
an antique crib. I thought it was an anti crib, like A-N-T-I-crib.
That's what I wrote down too. I'm like, an anti crib. What's an anti crib? Because antique has a k sound at the end and crib. And I just didn't enunciate.
You didn't do you ran it right into it. You went anti-crib like that.
It sounded like anti-crib. I can't believe you had the same thought. I had to rewind
I did.
Yes. I don't know what an anti-crib is. It doesn't sound very parent friendly.
Yeah.
Sounds like I don't want this kid. Anti-crib for an anti-kid.
Yes.
Anyway.
But you guys hug and you laugh at the end of this. There's so much hugging and love in this episode between you two, which was nice to see too.
Smiles, hugs. Yeah. I wrote that down too. Yeah. Okay, so next we're in the mess hall. Tom walks into the mess hall. There's Neelix with everyone clapping. The word is out that they're having a baby. Tom's confused. Neelix says Echeb has leaked the information.
Yeah.
And then Neelix grabs a drink to toast, and it's like some blue liquid. I was looking at the scene going, what the heck were we drinking? It was probably just water with like blue food coloring in it or something.
That's not Paris Delight?
It was not.
Did you guys have a Paris Delight drink before? No.
Okay. No, I don't remember that. Was there a Paris Delight?
I thought there was.
No, okay. I don't think that was Paris Delight. All right. I also noticed in the scene, everybody applauds like a big deal. And then as Neelix and I walk over, everybody turns their back to me.
Like you're having this conversation and everybody turns away and goes back to whatever they're doing. I mean, it was just like, hey, great. And then did you notice that? I mean, everybody's like,
ignores Tom after that. They're like, yay, forget it.
Like, I think people would come up and like pat you on the back or
there was no padding.
No, it was like we did our obligatory applause and now we're back to our snacks. Yeah,
snacks are important. That's the message here. Snacks are important.
Yes.
Okay.
Neelix does say that it's great news is learning that he's going to be the godfather because he has experience with Naomi. And Tom says, basically in the scene, he says, there's nobody who's more qualified than you to be the godfather. So we're sort of setting up this expectation that Neelix is great with kids because of Naomi. He's going to be the godfather.
But Tom, you forgot to consult your wife again on who to be godfather.
Oh my gosh.
Another faux pas.
Oh, so many bad husband choices here.
How many lessons learned in this episode?
There's a lot.
For all of us. Yeah. Yes. We go to engineering next. There's B'Elanna. Chakotay steps over to B'Elanna. He asks about, have you checked for warp core radiation leaks today? Mm-hmm. And B'Elanna's like, no, why? And Chakotay says, because you have a certain glow about you.
This is Star Trek humor.
Such a cheesy.
So cheesy.
Yeah, there's some pretty cheese ball comedy.
And then where does Janeway show up? She just materializes. Does she go site to site transport? She just shows up. She's like, I just heard. Congratulations. Yeah,
she just pops around the corner.
Just pops around. Hello, here's my head. I just heard. Congratulations. It was fun.
It's a little creepy.
It was very creepy. She came from nowhere. It's like she came out of the bulkhead. She's like, hello, I just heard. So anyway.
That's a good imitation.
Thank you.
It was a little creepy. She's.
I've missed your imitations. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, she hugs B'Elanna. She heard B'Elanna was dizzy, wants to know if she's okay.
Yeah.
If she needs some time off, she should take it. And B'Elanna says, no, she wants everything.
She doesn't want time
stay
off.
Yeah. As usual and keep working. She's fine.
Yeah.
One thing I will say, Roxanne, every time you and Robert Beltran have a scene, I always comment, Chakotay's really flirty with B'Elanna.
I felt it
in this episode too. I'm like, dude, she's having a baby. She's married. Like, stop being all suave. And, hey, B'Elanna.
Look, Chakotay knew B'Elanna before you even set eyes on her.
Of course.
They were really good friends. Okay.
It's a little flirty.
Whatever, jealous boy.
Help.
No, you're so jealous. Oh my God. She already kissed you in public in the corridor.
But Beltran cannot help playing a scene with Roxanne without a little extra.
You said it's flirty. I say it's friendship. I mean, there's
Roxanne tiebreaker. What
Roxanne,
do you think?
You think Chakotay is flirty with you?
Well, it was a kind of flirtation that was part of the relationship since we knew each other for such a long period of time.
Okay.
It's not out of the norm. Okay, that's all. Let's move on. In the corridor, Harry Kim is congratulating Tom Paris.
Yes, he is.
I like that scene with you and I. I thought
it was funny.
I thought it went well. It flowed. And then at the very end, I love how I go, time to let reality sink in before your life spins out of control. And I make this goofy ass face and I walk off camera. I've never done that before.
You left out something very important, Garrett. You make the goofy face, you walk off, but you hit me on the chest, which is what I used to do to you in real life.
That's why I made that goofy face. Because Roxanne, Robbie used to, we would be standing by craft service and I wouldn't say anything. Robbie would walk up to me and smack me really hard on the chest, knock me back. Like
hey,
a big brother would do. Hey, buddy. And it would hurt. I would be like, ow. And so I got to get him back in the scene. And that's why I made that funny face. I went,
it's the first thing I noticed at the end of the scene. I'm like, oh my God, he stole my bit. My bit from
on
real life.
Camera. In real life, I put on camera. Yes. That's what I did to get you back. Okay.
Nice scene.
That's my favorite scene of all. Okay.
Now we're in the Jeffrey's tube. Yeah, at first I was like, where is this? I couldn't figure out where Tuvok was working on some panel.
Yeah.
But then I realized it's that.
That's what that.
That little room off engineering.
Oh.
It's like that little.
Roxanne. Oh.
Remember that closet?
No, but it's so funny because just the other day, somebody made a joke when I was like on a different set and they went, this must be like a Jeffrey's tube. And I went, God, what is that again? I was I was just trying to go.
It's that claustrophobic little corridor.
Oh, I know, which makes sense now. Yeah. But it's like, I'm going, what was that again? It's something I couldn't remember.
Roxanne, when you see that person that said that, when you see them next, just go, and then walk
and
away.
I'll get it.
Delayed reaction, laughter. Okay.
Here we go.
Anyway, Tuvok's working. Tom walks in. Basically, it's a scene about Tom needs some advice. And he asks,
from the only father he knows, which is Tuvok.
Yes.
Right? I love that he didn't know. I love that he hadn't heard yet.
I know.
That was brilliant.
The person you go to for advice.
What are you talking about? Tom talks about this is a big responsibility. Feels like he's ready for it. And it's funny. I felt like I was kind of talking to myself. Like Tuvok's just standing there. And Tom's like, that's a big responsibility. I mean, I feel pretty ready for it. And it's a fun little...
Talking to the Vulcan. It's like talking to a 2x4. It's the same thing.
I liked his wisdom. The writing is great here. Perfect for the character when Tuvok says, offspring can be disturbingly illogical, yet profoundly fulfilling. You should anticipate a paradox. That's
great writing.
I thought that was brilliant.
Yeah. Because I feel that way in real life about my children. They are... completely illogical sometimes. They're incredibly fulfilling and they're always a paradox.
There you go.
Yes.
Good job, James Caan. Okay.
At the end of the scene, Tom basically tells Tuvok, I think I'm going to be volunteering to work with you on a regular basis. So I thought that was sweet because Tom and Tuvok as characters didn't have a ton of crossover. And so to feel like Tom is you know, warming up to Tuvok in a good way, I like the scene. It's
nice. Okay.
Right. Then we go to what I guess is Tom and B'Elanna's quarters in this episode.
What?
I was like, this room. He's lighting candles for a romantic dinner.
Have we seen Tom and B'Elanna's joint quarters yet until this
episode?
This is the very first time.
Wow. This is the first time?
Yep.
Yeah.
We had seen you in your quarters. We had seen Tom in his quarters for sure.
But not together.
This is the first time
quarters.
We see after they're married.
Yeah.
This is the first time in the series that we see their... We got an upgrade, Roxanne.
Yeah, got a bigger room. It looks nice in there.
Our old set was when they would convert that room over by sick bay. Mm-hmm. They'd flip it to Harry's quarters or whoever.
Yeah.
But this room is the one that's over by the mess hall side where the captain's quarters are.
Tuvok's quarters, Chakotay's. So you guys got a bigger room.
We got an upgrade to the suite.
Yeah.
And then I kick you out.
Yes. Yes.
As Torres does. That is, Torres will do what Torres will do. Continue. What's happening in the quarters?
What's happening?
A romantic dinner? Is that right?
Trying to have a romantic dinner. Tom talks about Neelix has offered to babysit, talks about him being godfather. Yeah. B'Elanna says Chakotay should be the godfather.
Well, she says he wants to be. She didn't say he should.
Wants to be, yeah. We do learn in this scene that, according to Chell, Bolians believe that if you give birth near a warp core, it will improve the baby's disposition. So I love this kind of wives' tales about sci-fi.
Non-scientific advice that he gave you.
Yes. You start to see some
annoyances,
bickering happening.
The beginnings of something is happening here. Yes.
I did not like when Tom says to B'Elanna, hey, take it easy. Advice to everyone here listening, don't tell your partner when they start getting passionate to say, hey, take it easy,
or hey, chill out. These are words you should never say to your spouse when they're in states of anxiety, because you are going down the wrong path there.
I did like the blocking in this scene. There was some movement to it. I know, you know, in the end, Tom comes around kind of giving B'Elanna a shoulder massage and the camera pushes in a nice two shot. Yeah, it was well directed and staged. You know, sometimes I've said to directors, Roxanne, like, first do no harm is one of my goals as a director. Like, first do no harm. Don't get in the way of the story. Then if you can add value with the staging or shots or special, you know, special things. Sometimes directors can get in the way of the story. And I feel like Peter stayed out of the way. Let us act it. His shots were simple but effective. I thought it was, that was one scene where I was like, oh. That was
I don't remember specifically, but I feel like he let us do our thing and then kind of worked that into, you know, a way to block it. But he listened to us, you know, I think he worked well together. And I think that he was responding to that. So I think that's good.
Yeah. This was one of those scenes where I was like, oh, I feel like we must have felt some instincts to move around. And he was able to work that into his plan in a great way. So.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, this scene is ended with a hail from the doctor. So the doctor hails both lieutenants Torres and Paris to report to sick bay, which then brings us over to sick bay. Yes. And we basically see a holographic extrapolation of the child's spine. And this is 10 months after birth, and it is completely curved right there. Yeah. So Torres mentions that she also had surgery for a curvature of spine when she was younger, and Paris doesn't know that. So there, now we have information that Paris has no idea about. So we see some curiosity from Paris, how he doesn't know things like this, but clearly this is a past that Torres is very, you know, tender for her. It's a traumatic time for her. So
well, she says
makes sense that she doesn't say it.
Yeah, she says I had this surgery, and Tom goes, oh, I didn't know that. She'd never shared it. Right. And then the doctor says, yes, it's very common in Klingon families, especially in females. Mm-hmm. Uh-oh, he almost gives away the sex of the baby.
Right.
Tom's like, wait, is it a girl?
Right.
And I thought Bob's performance, no, I didn't say that. It was great.
He was right.
Yeah, seeing the doctor sort of busted in this slip. Yeah, very funny exchange. He says something like, well, you cannot infer that. Bumbling. It was great. B'Elanna does ultimately say, no, it's okay. You can tell us. The doctor does confirm it is a girl. We have B'Elanna and Tom have their happy hugs.
Paris also asks for a projected image of the actual face of the, you know, with not just the spine. Baby. He wants to see what the whole baby looks like. And of course, Torres is taken back by the ridges that are there. Mm-hmm. Not happy about that. Mm-hmm. But what did you guys think of that visual effect right there? That to me looked like a Renaissance painting of like some cherub or some type of angelic little feet, you know, pudgy angel or something.
We talked to someone recently who said this was around season six was around the time when CG was becoming affordable enough that we could use computer generated images rather than 2D images. I guess my point is this was not a CG image. This was a 2D.
Like a matte painting?
Painting like of a baby that I think. It was not great. Let's be honest. It was not.
It wasn't
look very high tech.
That's because Peter was busy directing.
Directing.
You put no time into post any visual effect. Peter was like, whatever.
Well, you think about back though to like when I had my kids, which was like right around this time.
That's right.
We saw Emma. It was this black and white, barely, you could barely see the baby in there. Now people are coming out with these color photos that are almost like you've got a camera down there. You know, it's so bizarre. Yeah. And so I don't know where we should have been in the world of Star Trek at that point in, in time. Right. Yeah. But it told the story, I guess.
It told the story, but it was definitely in the early days of computer-generated 3D imagery. It wasn't quite photorealistic with a baby. It told the story, and B'Elanna is quite upset, you can tell, about the ridges. And she says something, I think, about, well, it's only the baby's only one quarter Klingon. How come the ridges are so prominent?
Yeah.
And the doctor says, well, the Klingon traits remain dominant for several generations. I started thinking, oh, this is going to be a story about there's going to be some kind of racial component to, you know, what B'Elanna's decisions are. But this story to me was much more than that. It was about childhood trauma. It was about
abandonment.
Was about abandonment. It was about science and what's, you know, what is ethically, you know, appropriate for science to do. So it was really this was a really powerful story, just in my opinion, on so many levels. It's not as simple as maybe it might look at first. Anyway, we go into a flashback. We see B'Elanna's father for the first time. We've never seen a flashback with B'Elanna's father.
No, we have. Really? We have not?
I don't think so.
Okay. All right. But I love how his line is, B'Elanna's father says, "You are so much like your mother." And the right before this scene, you hear Paris saying, "Oh, she looks just like her mother," looking at that little visual effect of your future baby. So it just transitioned very well, I felt.
Yes.
From that to the campfire.
I will say, I felt like in these flashbacks in this episode, it needed a stronger visual cue. I felt like a simple, I don't know, from a directorial critique, I guess I would say. It's like, it needed something. It needed, even if it was just editorial, that there was a flash or something visual, because it felt like it just...
To cue you into the fact that it's a flashback, you're saying there should be something a little bit more definitive?
In my opinion.
Yeah, it could have. It could have been lived a little bit. It felt like they were using a certain filter on it, you know?
Yeah, but I thought there was a filter on it, right?
But it didn't say a whole bunch. I mean, just in terms of... But there were a couple of transitions in there, I think, that were appropriate and stuff, but there was license to like do a little bit more. I mean, normally I don't say that, but sometimes it's too much, but I think there was license to take this one step further. I think
one step further, just to sharpen this, the idea that we were going into her flashback.
So I mean, the filter was not enough for you then, Robbie? Like, the filter was sort of a dream state filter as best as they could have used, right?
The filter gave it a veneer of we're not in the same time.
Right.
But I guess for me, what I mean is, like, whose point of view are we in? If we're going into B'Elanna's mind, then are we going into her point of view or something that felt a little more, a stronger visual cue.
I don't know. It felt very, it's interesting. That was a really good point, because it felt very objective when in a way it should have, it's subjective. It's completely from her point of view.
It's totally subjective.
She was experiencing it, but it was really treated like it was sort of a omniscient objective.
A God vision. Yeah. Like, yes. Yeah. And specifically, there's a later flashback where we go in and the scene starts with the two fathers sitting there talking outside at the campfire. And I was like, wait, whose memory are we at? Like, where's B'Elanna? And then eventually B'Elanna's in the tent and you see that she's eavesdropping.
Right.
But I would have started from that point of view, personally. I would have started from
young B'Elanna.
Inside the tent.
Inside the tent, peeking out at,
That was the part of the flashbacks I felt were, objective and subjective are perfectly put. It should have been a stronger point of view in my
opinion. It should have been subjective, is what we're saying.
We come out of the flashback.
Yeah, and Paris says, she's perfect, isn't she, in Sick Bay, right? And now we jump to Torres and Paris's quarters.
Yes.
And you guys are kind of just recapping the day.
Yes. Tom says, 6 years in the Delta Quadrant, and nothing has scared me as much as hearing our baby had a problem. Which I just noted in this scene, like Tom's evolution as a character, I really love that he was able to change so much, and hearing that kind of vulnerability out of him as a character. He was not a vulnerable and open person when he came on the ship. So I just noted that in this scene.
He was more like Chakotay.
Yes, exactly. Flirty in every scene. Flirt with anybody. Chakotay flirted with Tom. I mean,
Chakotay flirted with everything, including inanimate objects. Continue.
I did notice in this scene when I was Tom was in bed and kind of turned to B'Elanna, I didn't have real sideburns on the show. They would put the glue down and lay in the sideburns. Uh-oh. And as I turned, the way the light hit the side of my face,
did you see the glue?
So much reflection of the glue.
Of the glue. Oh, man.
It was so much glue reflection in that triangle shape. I was just like, why didn't they put some powder?
Who's supposed to catch that? Makeup is supposed to catch that, right?
I guess so.
My hair was a wig. I don't know if you knew that.
Yeah, we know.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
I saw your wig every morning when I came to the makeup trailer. I'd just be staring at your damn wig. I'd be like, there's her
glue,
wig.
Glue. So yes. I'm very aware of that.
You had a lot of glue.
Oh, I had a lot of glue.
But they would hide, like, that your wig had lace. Your wig had a little bit of lace around the edge. But they were really good at hiding that.
This is what I don't get, Roxanne. You already have good hair. Why did they give you a wig to begin with? Why did you need the wig?
It had ridges. And how do you blend in the ridges into the hair?
Oh, okay. So you need to put some lace.
Go over that. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Pretend I never asked that. Okay, let's go.
But that's why I cut my hair off, because I had really short hair during that period of time, because I was tired of pin curling my hair up into the wig. So
when you booked the role, was your hair long when you booked Torres?
It was longer. Yeah, it was like shoulder length.
Okay.
Did you wear a lot of wigs in your career generally, or was this like, this was the biggest?
I've worn a couple of wigs on stage, you know?
Yeah. For Chorus Line, you wore a wig? No. That was your regular hair.
Other stuff.
Yeah, other stuff.
I did Into the Woods for a year on the road.
Yeah,
cool.
I had to wear this like page boy red wig as Jack and the Beanstalk. So yeah, I would have
page boy.
It was so funny. And I would have to prep my hair.
You prepped it. No one else, correct?
The way that it worked for me, eight shows a week, was I would put the bobby pins and prep it and put the wig cap on. And then we would all go into the wig room
to get applied.
And they would fit the wig on me there, but I had to put on the wig cap and stuff. In the theater, you do your own makeup. If there's a wig involved, you do the prep work for that. And then they put the wig on.
Damn.
And they also wire they put the microphones when you're on stage. They put the wire up your back, and so the microphone comes in through the.
I never had microphones. I only had ambient ones. I've never worked with that.
I was doing it in the transition. Yeah, because I had only done the ones that are, I guess.
And then for mic stage. Check to come in when we went from different places, you'd have to be, you know, making sure everything was being picked up, and you know the people back there going like all crazy.
So Roxanne, you saying that you never wore one of those microphones, is this your sort of story of saying that you walked 7 miles through the snow to get to school and that you didn't deal with the new technology of that?
In the old days.
I had to project on my own.
You had to use your own natural microphone. Your voice is what you had to use.
That is a loss, in my opinion, in the theater, is that now, because of the technology, has gotten so good.
Yeah.
That actors are able to be on stage and sort of whisper, and it's just amplified.
They can hear it in the back of the house.
It's a shame, because there's something about that projection that brings out a theater experience to me.
And remember a stage whisper, where you learn how to whisper on stage and they can hear you in the back row.
You project the whisper to the back of the house. Yeah.
Nobody else has to know. Nobody has to know how to do that anymore as an actor.
I've used that phrase as a director with younger actors. I'll be like, do it more like a stage whisper. And they're like, what?
What
does that mean?
What's a stage whisper?
Yeah. I don't know what you're meaning. Explain that.
Oh, God, that's so funny.
All right. Back to the script. Robbie.
Yes. So they're in bed. My sideburn glue is shining all over the place. I was blinding B'Elanna with my sideburn glue.
Right.
B'Elanna seems very conflicted here. So they start to go to bed. We have another flashback. The kids and the dads are on a camping trip, and the kids are going to go on a hike.
B'Elanna doesn't want to go.
She doesn't want to go.
B'Elanna wants to just go fishing with Uncle Carl and Dad.
She brings a pole up. She says, Dad, I increased the field strength on the targeting lure.
That's Torres.
Nerd
so
alert.
B'Elanna. Yeah.
She's science. Nerd alert. She's engineering the fishing poles to try to... impressed dad.
But that's so B'Elanna, though. Perfect.
It's so B'Elanna.
Mm-hmm. But she doesn't want to go with the other cousins because they are really mean to her. She just wants to hang out with pops and uncles.
That's reason enough, don't you?
Yeah. I agree, 1,000%. Hang out with the adults who are not going to be mean to you, right? So
there's a little moment here where B'Elanna says, Dad, and he goes, yeah. And she goes, never mind. And she goes on the hike anyway. And that was a heartbreaking little moment, but to me that moment is like
gave you the feels.
Things as a kid that they don't say, that they stuff inside, you know. She's stuffing this her feelings there. And I don't know, that little moment was powerful.
She did well with that. She did really well, I thought.
All around I thought she did a great job.
And we come out of that flashback seeing B'Elanna still deep in thought, not asleep yet, so clearly not a great memory. Now we have a ship flying by. The ship is shipping itself through space. And back in the morning, Tom B'Elanna are up. And I wrote down a toaster. Tom's got a toaster.
I know.
Just a toaster, though. Why didn't Tom set up a little mini kitchen, like 50s style?
I don't know. I think that toaster was a gift from B'Elanna because she knows
you love. It
was a wedding gift.
Okay. But you could replicate toast. The fact that you were doing it the old-fashioned way is very Tom.
I know, very Tom.
Yeah.
It was cute. Cute little detail.
And it seems like you only know how to make one thing for breakfast. Peanut butter.
Butter toast.
That's it. Peanut butter toast.
Yeah. I also noticed that Tom is not concerned about being late. He's like, it'll be fine. He's, you know, whereas B'Elanna doesn't, they're heading to an appointment and B'Elanna doesn't want to be late. But Tom's like, yeah, it's no big deal. I related to that very much like me in real life. Mm-hmm. I'm a little bit like, well, if I'm kind of close to the time, it'll be fine.
Good enough.
Yeah. Yes, very much like me. And then B'Elanna says, it's okay. You don't need to come with me. It's a minor procedure. And Tom seems to be fine with that. He's, well, then you're on your own. And he eats his toast and she heads off to sickbay.
Any comments on that last thing for you?
No, because I mean, I obviously don't want him to come with me.
Correct.
Yes.
You're doing your little, you're going to be dastardly.
I'm doing
you?
Kind of, no, stay where you are. It's all fine. Yeah. Let me just, and I've got to get the run on, you know, and so it's, I'm manipulating is what I'm doing.
Yes, most definitely.
We go to sickbay next. Doctor says he's expanded his database to in obstetrics and pediatrics. He's added some programs. He wants to start with a transabdominal vocalization, he says. B'Elanna's like, wait, you mean sing to my baby? It's like, yes, it'll help the mathematical abilities.
Oh God.
And she's like, yeah, we'll talk about that later. And I love the shot where he kind of leans down with a pad. He says, sure, we can talk about it at our first parenting class.
Yeah,
and
the
pad sort of appears in the foreground.
Yeah.
It was a very funny, sharp comedic moment that I thought was well done.
But Peter Lortzen kept that focus on Roxanne the entire time, which is great.
Mm-hmm, so. Mm-hmm. The lights ultimately dim down and the doctor starts this procedure to fix the spine. That's all we think we're doing right now.
Yes.
Going to fix the spine thing. And we go into another flashback. This is where B'Elanna's invited to come have lunch. She's off by herself working on a pad.
This is when she goes off with the cousins. Remember, she doesn't want to be with the cousins, right? Mm-hmm. So
doesn't want to be there.
Lunchtime.
Yeah. One of the boys, is it Drew? Is that his name?
No, it's Dean.
Dean.
Dean because he's mean. Remember that. Dean is mean.
Mean Dean.
Yeah, mean Dean.
Sees a worm.
First of all, earthworms don't really hang out on top of. They're inside the dirt, so he should have found the worm coming sticking out of the dirt.
Can I just say one thing? Those kids probably have kids now.
Oh yeah.
Yes, you're right. Those kids probably have kids now.
It's like really weird to like think of them as like kind of just caught and stuck in time. When in actuality, if they're all still existing on this earth, it's like it's a whole other thing. We keep forgetting how long ago this was. Oh, God.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Those actors are paying taxes right now as we speak. They put the worm on the sandwich, which is horrible. Little B'Elanna does a really good job reacting to it, I thought. It was really good.
I thought she did great.
Yeah. Especially for as novice of an actor that this that the actress that played young B'Elanna is. Wonderful job.
Great job. Great job. We come out of that flashback back to sick bay. The doctor's finished. Spine is perfectly aligned now. And the doctor does say her spine is better than all right if her parents are any indication. That was a really nice comment from the doctor.
Definitely. Yeah. Seems like he's always sort of trashing Tom Paris. But in this scene, he's very nice.
Yeah, the doctor can be very sarcastic or, you know, sharp. And he was very warm. And it was nice to see.
Yeah.
Then we go into the holodeck where B'Elanna sneaks in, pulls up some computer files, asks the computer to look at the baby again, that CG baby or whatever it was. Scary baby.
Scary baby.
The hollow image comes up. Then she says, what will the baby look like at 12 years old?
But I love the way you played that, Roxanne, because you don't really have any lines, but you in that part, when you see the 12-year-old extrapolation of your child, but you can tell that you are affected by the past. You play that very well. So you brought that baggage in that scene. So kudos to you.
Yeah. Especially when you're looking at nothing. Like there was no, when we film these scenes, we have to imagine these visual effects. So
we're looking at absolutely nada. at this time.
Very well done. Mm-hmm. She says, computer, delete the following gene sequences, punches in some genes she wants deleted, extrapolate what the child would look like now. Mm. The image changes to a blonde, first a blonder version.
Yes.
Of, I guess, you know, instead of the dark hair, it's now blonde, but it's still the ridges are there. So she deletes some more sequences.
Yep.
Says extrapolate that. Now the ridges are gone.
Completely.
And looks like she found what she's looking for. She says save changes and restrict access to Bellana only. Mm. And I wrote, whoa, I feel uncomfortable. Yeah, this is a tricky medical area ethically we're going into, is literally changing the racial makeup of a child, a bias of one being more desirable than another.
It was becoming possible then, it's completely possible now, and there are definitely some ethical questions to be asked, just because you can't do something is it right to do it, you know?
Yeah.
That's really interesting.
Very, very interesting question. Yeah. We go back to sick bay and the doctor's walking. And now Bellana's chasing him with a pad in her hand. Mm-hmm. Come around the corner. He's wound up about this. He says, there's no medical reason for this. And she's saying, no, there is a medical reason. These genes create redundant organs, for example. They're, mm-hmm. She says, these are superfluous. And the doctor says, no, they're there for a reason. This third lung, this extra lung, gives Klingons more stamina on the battlefield. She says, well, my daughter's not going to be a Klingon warrior. I love his response. He says, with all due respect, you have no idea what your daughter's going to be.
Yeah. Yeah.
What if she develops an interest in athletics? Greater lung capacity would be an advantage. So
very wise for the doctor to say.
Yeah. Great debate here. Very heated. She argues, well, this could be preventative care because the extra lung might become diseased. And
right.
She says this is like just removing an appendix before it gets inflamed.
I mean, her whole mission is she's trying to convince the doctor that this is health concerns. That's it. Has nothing to do with the fact that she's going to look Klingon. Just
I call BS. It's not about health concerns.
No.
And then the doctor says, does Tom know about that? Have you talked with, you know, your husband about this? And she says, no, he doesn't know about it yet. He says, well, I will look at what you're proposing, but you need to talk together about this. And we jump into the Delta Flyer next with the scene with Tom and Bellana. This is where I felt like I was yelling too much. I didn't like my performance in this.
Really? You mean right off the bat?
Yeah.
No, I felt the tone was right, because this is something that you're completely against. So you couldn't have just been like, absolutely not. You know, you couldn't have been that lackadaisical. Hey, I'm Tom Paris. Hi, yes, ma'am.
I couldn't have been the Chicote. Chicote would have
flirted his way through the scene, but no, Tom Paris needs to be yelly in this one. So I thought you were right. You're too critical, dude. Do you agree, Roxanne? I think the tone was right.
Because if you think about it, it's like your wife is going off the deep end. Like, what is she? I mean, it's like, what are you doing? It's so insane. I mean, which I think you expressed really well.
Most definitely.
I think the conflict was justified, absolutely. I just feel like it was more about levels for me. I think it could have found some other levels in
some more nuance, is what you're saying, right?
Yeah, okay. Maybe that's what I was missing, is a little more nuance.
Okay.
But anyway, they argue. Bellana's still talking about the child's health, and he calls her out on it. He says, you don't want her to be Klingon. That's what this is all about.
Torres brings out that line, I was treated like a monster, which is, it's heartbreaking to hear Torres have to admit that, but that's how she felt, most definitely.
And Tom says, you know, she won't be treated like a monster. Everyone on this ship is going to accept her just how she is.
Yeah. Can I ask you, Roxanne, because like for me, a lot of this episode resonated because being Asian in America and being looked at as an outsider. Did you also, when you were working on this, acting in this, did you draw upon anything racial from your past being Puerto Rican? Did you have any, issues with that?
I did, only because I was in a profession that didn't really have very many Latin people in it as role models, at the time. That was very discouraging. I didn't really have any role models that looked like me, even though I wasn't at the time looking for role models that looked like me. I was just kind of always amazed when people would say, yeah, you can't do this because you don't look like everybody else. And it was like, that was and upsetting. Right. So there were definitely things I was personally pulling from as being kind of caught in two worlds, you know, as being an actor. Like, I just wasn't really good at a thick accent and playing a drug dealer or a maid. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But, they weren't hiring Latin doctors yet. Like, this was, that's why Taurus was such an interesting character, because they really weren't doing that, you know?
At all. Definitely.
I know.
I mean, that's the most advanced degree character for a Latina. It was Torres at the time. Am I right? I mean, you weren't cleaning somebody's house. You weren't, you know, you weren't doing all the stereotypical roles. It was an amazing role.
Wasn't a gang member.
I guess I would like to just dig a little bit deeper. Like, when you were a kid growing up in grade school, did you get picked on for being not Caucasian? That's my question.
I didn't, but it could be I just wasn't aware of it. I grew up in Los Angeles. And it was before there was an influx of a Mexican population there.
Okay.
And I think everybody had their path. Like, there were a lot of Jewish people that went to my school. There were, you know, Italians.
Where did you go to school? Where did you go to school?
Beverly Hills High School.
Oh, you went to Beverly. Oh, okay.
And at the time, I just thought, I come from, my background is this exotic island, you know, called Puerto Rico. It just didn't cross my mind.
Wow.
You know, it's just kind of like, I don't know. Everybody was different. Maybe I just wasn't sensitive to it, or I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't.
Well, you just didn't hear it. You never. Yeah. Well, good for you. I mean, that means you felt adjusted, that you were part of the group. Then you didn't feel like an outsider, really.
But I only began to feel like an outsider later on when I got into my career.
When you got into your career.
Like, wait, you look different.
Right. But Beverly had so many different races already going to Beverly Hills High, right? So it wasn't a big deal.
That's exotic. You're from that island that I've never been to. You know, it's like, but it was pretty cool. You know, I'm Puerto Rican. Isn't that like cool? Like from West Side Story. Isn't that cool?
You know? Do you guys never flew back to Puerto Rico when you were a kid to visit relatives and any of that stuff?
Oh, my great grandparents had come over and became Neoricans, you know, and then they had my grandparents and my parents. And I was born in LA. And actually, I did go back there once when I was too little to remember. The first time I went back there was when I was doing a chorus line on the road, and we performed in Puerto Rico. And I had relatives coming out of the woodwork that were all claiming to like know me, and they all showed up to the theater, you know.
Wow.
And
so the Caballero clan was coming in full. Is that what was happening?
I was in the Florida and the Florida side of the family. Actually, they were the ones that were really there. But, and just really side note, it's so funny because in one of the songs I sing in the chorus line called Nothing, there's one where she goes, there are no bobsleds in San Juan, where she's, you know, being asked to act like she knows it. And on the day we're doing the sound check, I'm out there and I'm running through and I go, there are no bobsleds. All of a sudden they lower this bobsled over my head and everybody starts laughing and I'm looking, I don't even know what it is. And it's just, they put the bobsled when we were in San Juan. It was like,
they lowered it over your head. That is so funny. Oh my God.
Funny.
I love that. Oh my God.
Really funny. Okay. Yeah.
But, well, thank you for going down the rabbit hole. That's something I've always wanted to ask you. Okay. Where are we, Robbie?
They have a fight. Obviously, Tom and B'Elanna are having bumpy conflict here. They go to the captain's ready room. Janeway's like, I'm not sure what you want me to do here. Is she the couples therapist now? Tom and B'Elanna need some couples therapy. Yeah, B'Elanna's saying she wants the captain to order the doctor to genetically alter this baby. And Tom says no, he disagrees. Janeway says this is ethically questionable.
Torres's argument is that you did this for 7 of 9.
Yes.
You removed all of her implants. And then that's when, you know, the reverse argument is, well, no, we just made her look like she did before originally, which is human. So that was the argument, but Torres doesn't see it that way. That's like, no, you changed
valid discussions. I just thought they weren't afraid of really going down every avenue here, which was
agreed.
Yeah.
Tom brings up mood swings, which again, listeners, I would recommend don't blame your partner's mood swings on anything. We're in the corridor next. B'Elanna is walking away from Tom. Tom runs up.
I love how in the beginning you guys are together, and then as arguments come, Torres is further ahead and further ahead in the corridor.
Tom does suggest Again, I wish I wasn't yelling. I was yelling at you in this. I don't know why.
In the corridor scene?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
He's like, he wants to have a civilized discussion, but he's yelling, so it makes no sense.
Yeah.
But anyway, Tom suggests, let's go to the holodeck, maybe a change of scenery. Mm-hmm. She's like, the holodeck is your solution for everything, you know, which I thought was a great comment on their characters. Let's see. B'Elanna says, yeah, she says, I'm just tired of talking about this. She walks off. Mm-hmm. We go to Harry's quarters and the sweet, sweet sounds.
Oh my gosh. I get to Harry. I did not remember. I thought I only played the clarinet. I know that I asked them to give me a saxophone because at the time President Clinton was playing a saxophone and that was much cooler than a clarinet.
Yeah.
And here we have Kim playing the saxophone, which I love.
Well.
Thank you. It looked good, didn't it? And just the way the formation of that shot, when you look at what Peter Lawrenson did, it worked well. I was very happy.
It was really well. I believe that you were playing. It was really good.
Thank you.
Really good.
Thank you. But Tom is there because evidently he not only did he not get the couch, he had to leave quarters entirely.
He's going to sleep at Harry's. Ask if he needs a reservation to sleep over. Yeah. Harry lets him in. My couch is your couch. And they start putting sheets on the couch.
Yeah.
And I was like, in the future, do we have to fold the sheets the same way? Like, it's making a bed, doing the sheets is a lot of work. Haven't we figured out an easier way in the future?
Yeah, there has to be an advanced, you know, technologically advanced sheets. Something. Where you don't have to fold them and you don't have to do
things. Tuck them in. And I don't know. Yeah. It's a sidebar, but I was like,
it was very retro, wasn't it?
It was retro for sure. But again, I like the dialogue in here. I like
James Conn wrote. You guys' relationship there is good.
Yeah, it was very nice. I throw the pillow at you. Like I said, my couch is your couch. It ends on that line, which is very good.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Back to the flashback, right? We have another flashback back at the campsite. Young B'Elanna has run away. They can't find her. This is what this is. Yeah.
They're worried that she's not back. She shows up, says they got separated.
Her cousin, her female cousin, does feel bad. She's trying to own up to the fact that this is pretty much their fault, right? The cousin's fault. We're losing their cousin.
And we find B'Elanna by herself. Her dad comes up to talk. I love the business. She had a leaf in her hand or something.
And
she was pulling this leaf. And you know how
nice,
you know, we've all done that probably, like just torn up a leaf.
Mm-hmm.
It was a subtle little piece of business, but I thought it was great to show the anxiety that she was feeling. It was a good bit of business that I liked a lot for this little girl.
Again, this whole scene really, really resonated with me because when B'Elanna says, I wish I weren't Klingon, this is an exact conversation I had with my mother when I came home from school after being bullied. I said, I wish I wasn't Chinese. I said that to my mom. I said, I wish I was never born to you. And that was, you know, now I get choked up that I would ever say something so horrible to my mother, but that's how bad the bullying was. So I was basically B'Elanna Torres, young B'Elanna Torres in real life because that was
You had a lot of bullying in Memphis.
Oh my gosh.
In particular,
but to tell my parents, like, I wish I wasn't Chinese, that's hardcore. Yeah. That's exactly what B'Elanna's dealing with here.
Yeah.
She wishes she wasn't who she is, her chemical, her racial makeup. She can't stand it because of all the hardship she went through. And it's interesting, Roxanne, that living in Los Angeles, that you didn't really have a lot of that stuff, people making fun of you being Latina or anything like that.
I said I didn't have the bullying, but the feeling that I was going to different worlds. And that perhaps the profession that I'd chosen, the thing that I wanted to do, wouldn't be available to me because of that.
Right.
That's in my early 20s. That's what I went through.
Yeah. You know? Went through it as a career. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I did. Yeah. And just kind of, you know, wishing I could be blonde and blue eyed. And I feel like I could do that job if you would, you know, change the look.
Yeah. Back then in your early 20s, you know, you had talent, you know, that you had prepared, and God knows, we know how to prepare. We know that. Okay. So then you learn all out of the blue that casting or producers are like, no, you can't play that role. You don't look the right way. And now you're like, what? I've never heard of this before at Beverly. So it must have been a shock to the system for you to hear that.
It was also very naive, I think, on my part. For some reason, I think I was just either sheltered or blind. I think I've always been a bit blind as to a lot of, I don't know, just in the And that's helped me sometimes, but not all the time. You know?
Right. But what I also didn't realize, you're like fifth generation or something. You said your great-great-grand, is that right?
Yeah, my great-grandparents
came over. Your great-grandparents, yeah. So by that time, did your parents even speak Spanish at that point then?
Yeah, they spoke Spanish. They didn't speak it around me, though, because they didn't want me to be influenced by that.
Right. Okay.
Many of my dad would pass sometimes as Italian in his profession as a criminal defense attorney, and people would assume he was Italian and he wouldn't correct them.
Wow.
By a lot. And I started to realize this, and especially as the ethnic makeup changed in Los Angeles, and then people kept thinking that I was Mexican. I was going, no, I'm not. There's nothing wrong with that, but that's not what I am. And because you're Latina doesn't mean that you're the same, that everybody's the same. You know, it's like, you just go, wow, it's a lot of wanting to put you in boxes, you know? It's a fascinating thing. Yes. I think a lot of people connected with Alana in this episode because of exactly what you're talking about, Garrett.
I was going to say in this scene, I identified in a way with the father when he comes over to talk to her. She's pulling that leaf apart and he shares his story. He says, he tries to relate to his daughter. He says, when I was a kid, I used to fall asleep in class and they called me John Snores instead of John Torres.
Right.
And she goes, it's not the same thing. And he goes, oh yeah, kids just tease each other. That's normal. He says, you just try to be less sensitive. Yeah. And I guess what I'm saying is, as your father, the white guy here, the human, he was trying to say, oh, I get it. And I don't think he does get it. I was like, how could you say that? Just be less sensitive.
Yeah.
You know, why wouldn't you say, be proud of who you are? I thought that was bad fathering. It was very, very insensitive to her experience because he was trying to say, I was teased too, so don't worry about it. No, you weren't teased. He wasn't teased for being racially different or species different. She was being teased. She was having experience of being teased as a Klingon. And for him to say, oh, I get how you feel, is very presumptuous. And I feel that in life sometimes, like I can't tell a woman, oh, I get how you feel as a woman, your experience in the world. I can't presume that I know that. That's your experience. Like you tell me what you've experienced. I shouldn't be correcting you or diminishing you. So this was a moment I related to the father in a way, being in that position of like, in my life, I have tried to say, oh, I experienced what you experienced, but I'm learning in life now. I haven't experienced, Garrett, what you've experienced.
Correct.
One thing before I just remember that I also have a Chinese daughter. And so and that whole experience, which would be a whole other podcast, I think, but just with me being Puerto Rican, my husband being, you know, German, Irish, my daughter being a mix there and my other daughter being Chinese.
Chinese, yeah.
So very interesting going through life and trying to understand how she feels, because people are always give that second look when she comes up to me, like, is that your mother? Is, you know, it's like, how does that work? It's part of the whole thing, you know?
Sure. Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you for bringing that up though.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. So we end that scene with dad talking to young B'Elanna, but she doesn't want to join everybody for dinner. She wants to go off and read. So,
right. But there is a time jump, right? Because it's the same scene where the father and the uncle are having this private conversation and little B'Elanna is listening in. And that's the end of the scene.
We go back to Tom and B'Elanna's quarters. B'Elanna's sitting up in bed. This is where I felt like we should have had the point of view from B'Elanna, because we go back into a flashback and we're with the dads, and then B'Elanna overhears them talking about her mother's intensity, talking about how his parents were right. Maybe he shouldn't have married B'Elanna's mother.
Yeah, and that final line from B'Elanna's father in that scene when he says, but she never thought I had the constitution to live with a Klingon, talking about their own mother, like John's, so B'Elanna's grandmother. And now I'm living with two of them. That was such a biting comment for young B'Elanna to hear. And like, it's sort of like, it's almost like her father was saying, I'm living with the two monsters. And I think that's what young B'Elanna heard now.
We also hear B'Elanna's mother's name, Merle. Right. And so this is landing on her, this sort of her father's, her parents' marriage and what's going on there.
Was Barge of the Dead after this?
It was before this.
Well, then we did meet Merle. Because
Did we hear her name? Did we?
Yes, we heard her name already.
Okay,
there.
So we heard. Okay.
And whoever, I forget who the actress was who played my mom, but that was. Yeah, but we didn't meet her at that point.
Yes, okay. Barge of the Dead. You had a lot of scenes with her too.
Yeah.
Played your mother. Yes. But are you 1,000% sure, both of you, that we never see your father before this?
I don't think so.
I thought we did.
I'm pretty sure.
In Faces, when with Durst taking his face off and all that stuff going on there, when you were all 100% Klingon, we didn't see any flashback with her father.
No.
Okay.
No, I agree. I don't think
I stand corrected then. Sorry. Let's keep going.
All right. So we finish that flashback. We come back to engineering. B'Elanna's deep in thought when Chakotay comes up and offers up his suggestion for a name, Taya, the feminine form.
Is it Taya or Taya? What? How did
he
say?
Oh, I thought he said Taya.
Taya. That's right. Chakotay. Okay, Taya.
Yes.
Feminine form of Chakotay.
Yes. This is where I wrote inappropriately flirty. here's Chakotay. Suave Chakotay. Anyway, B'Elanna says, I'll add it to the list right after Phloxia, Neelix's name, suggestion. It's number 32. She's got 32 name suggestions. And we go out to the corridor, and Chakotay and B'Elanna are heading off to grab some coffee, and Tom shows up. There's an awkward beat with the three of them. Chakotay says,
totally awkward.
Yeah. Chakotay's like, I think I forgot my pad. I'm going to head back. I'll see you later.
Exit this situation. Yeah.
Yes. we do learn that Harry has the lumpiest pillows on the ship.
Hey, that's not nice.
Lumpy pillows.
The heck?
And that that Harry snores, we learn. He sleeps with the heat way up. It was way too hot.
All right. I'm going to say.
We learn a lot about Harry.
I'll agree on lumpy pillows and snoring, but I'm not going to agree on turning the heat way up.
I can't imagine in life you would do that. Probably like a very cold room.
An ice cold, yes.
I would guess.
Do you remember every time, Robbie, we walk in the makeup trailer, if Roxanne was there before us, it would be 172 degrees in there? Yes. And then if Roxanne wasn't there before us, it would be perfect. It was nice and cool. But I always knew when you were there before me, Roxanne, I'd open up that door and just be hit with the Amazon tropic heat. And I would like, God damn it. I know Roxanne did this every time. I would be fighting the women to turn down that thermostat. Roxanne would walk back, turn it right back up. And I'd turn it right back down. It was like pretty much, that's all.
That's funny. I forgot about that. Tom and B'Elanna do reconcile a bit here. And then the doctor calls, report to sick bay, go to the doctor's office. He's changed his whole opinion. He says he thinks B'Elanna's right, that they should do these recommended changes. And Tom is very confused in this scene. And the doctor says, this is critical that we do this right away.
Yeah.
And he scheduled the procedure for the following morning. And Tora's playing innocent. Oh, okay. Well, I guess we should do what the doctor says. And Tom doesn't like it. We go to the astrometrics lab. Seven and Ichab are working. Tom comes in. He says, thanks for helping B'Elanna. And by the way, there may be some problems with the baby. Could you take a look? Ask Ichab to take a look at the doctor's findings, since Ichab has such expertise in genetics. And I was like, what? What? Since when? Since when is Ichab our geneticist?
Yeah. What is he, your second opinion? I don't know.
You know what? Ichab is so focused on work that he doesn't even have time to change his clothes. So I'm going to agree with that. You know, he has the same outfit. So there you go. He's an expert on genetics.
Ichab looks at the pad for like 3 seconds and says, oh, yes, you're correct. There's a computational error. So clearly he is really smart. Tom says maybe it's a glitch or something. Seven runs a diagnostic. She says, nope, not a glitch.
No.
Program has been tampered with. Tom tries to contact B'Elanna. She's not responding.
Oh, B'Elanna, what have you done?
Yes.
Gosh.
He asks for a computer for her location. B'Elanna's in sick bay. Bum, bum, bum. We go into sick bay and she's in the bed. The doctor said he's very relieved that she decided not to wait even until tomorrow. She wants to do this procedure right now. I felt like Bob was playing sort of creepy doctor, like possessed doctor.
But he still did a good job, though,
thought. It was great, though. I loved it. And when they said, you really need to turn your program off, I was absolutely.
Absolutely. He's just too agreeable to everything, isn't he? A little creepy. Absolutely.
Yeah, so they're starting the procedure. We go back to the astrometrics lab. Seven says, someone's blocked communication. We can't even contact the doctor.
Paris asked if you can deactivate the doctor. Mm-hmm. No, access to his program has been restricted. Dun, mm-hmm. dun, dun.
Tom says, Tuvok, yeah, meet me at Tuvok. Sick bay. Mm-hmm. Come on. Outside sick bay, Tuvok and Paris arrive. The door won't open. It won't take Tuvok's code. So what does Tuvok do? He grabs a little plunger, sticks it on the door, and with his super strength,
that's all it takes. That he just plunger.
Slides it open. Mm. That is a reinforced titanium plated door.
Door.
And Tuvok, boom.
He's Vulcan. He has power. Strong.
Very impressed.
He had the power. Yeah.
We run inside. Tom says, stop this procedure, but there's a force field. We can't get close. He tells the doctor his program was altered. B'Elanna says, ignore him.
Mm-hmm. Ignore him. Roxanne, I'm going to say, so that's some of the best acting from a bio bed that I've ever seen. Roxanne, you knocked it out of the park from the bio bed. It's very hard to act in a bio bed. And so good job that you.
Good job. Good She's job. Trying to get this done ASAP.
I didn't have my feet up in stirrups. That you didn't have...
Yes, that would have been too much.
TMI. No.
Tuvok calls the bridge, tells Harry to deactivate the force field by cutting power to the EPS relays. We go on the bridge. There's Harry, but he can't do it because...
No. He says access has been restricted, but I will have to bypass them.
Exactly.
So he's not that he can't do it. He just has to do a couple...
He has to bypass...
He's got to push Palau button for it to work.
Yes.
Palau. That's it.
Palau three times.
Exactly. And then boom, he's bypassed it. That's all it takes.
We go back to sick bay. The power gets shut off. Tom goes over to deactivate whatever the doctor's doing on that biobed.
Yeah.
And he says to Tuvok, give us a minute. Tuvok steps out. Tom is heated, really hot here.
Oh my gosh.
He can't believe that she did this. And B'Elanna says she upgraded the doctor's program so that he could understand what needs to be done.
Yeah.
She's really rationalizing this. And this is a great scene. This is a great, I thought, Roxanne, I was very proud of us.
I was really proud of us too. I really was, you know, to look back on it and go, man, that stands up. It does.
It really did.
I've had that experience in this podcast watching all these. We're now in season 7, recapping these episodes. And a lot of these I had not even seen once. I didn't watch our show regularly when it was on the air. I'd catch it now and then, but often we were working or... kids.
Yeah, there were episodes I never caught. I had the same thing. I mean, I did later on, I think, but there probably are a couple that I haven't seen.
Yeah, and when I see these, there's a lot of work, like this scene that you and I did, but all of our fellow castmates had moments that just really hold up, that are really well done. This is one of them. Yeah.
Amazing cast. You really start to break us all down, you know? It's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great scene. Tom is yelling and hitting consoles now and then, but B'Elanna is really expressing what's going on.
B'Elanna talks about how she was inseparable with her father. He spoiled her. She completely worshipped him. But the older that she got, they just grew further and further apart. And this camping trip was, you know, supposed to be something that would make things better. But instead, no, it was an awful, awful trip. And she ended up trying to run away. Yeah.
Really bad. We have another flashback.
B'Elanna packing her bag, ready to run away.
We see B'Elanna say that, you know, it was stupid. Where was I going to go? And Tom's getting where all this is coming from, you know, that he just wanted to.
That you probably just wanted to stop here.
You just wanted to stop, you know, your dad. We go back into another flashback.
A lot of flashbacks.
There's a lot of flashbacks.
That's why I thought that actress did such a great job, because it wasn't just one under five that she had. She was throughout this whole episode. Yeah.
Yeah. In the flashback, though, Dad does reveal to young B'Elanna that he and her mother are having some problems. And she says, you don't even love Mom. You don't love her anymore. And she says, you know, you're just like everybody else. You don't like Klingons. So we see that, you know, she's blaming her parents' separation or, you know, marital problems on. Well,
yeah, but also in this scene, she does say, "I heard what you said to Uncle Carl."
Exactly.
This is the whole, you know, this is where it drops.
Yeah,
and it comes out, and the big confrontation happens.
Mm-hmm. And Tom tries to say, we go back to sick bay. Tom says, well, maybe you misunderstood, you know, maybe your father was right. He said you misunderstood what you heard.
And B'Elanna says, no, I heard what I heard. I was so angry. And Paris does agree with her. Well, you had a right to be after the things he said. So now this is being good Paris, like Paris who's empathetic. We have that final flash, another flashback where young B'Elanna says, exclaims, if you can't stand living with us, then why don't you just leave? And then we flash back to sickbay and we see modern day adult Torres saying, and that's exactly what he did. So the father left. Yeah. So here are the abandonment issues. And here is the issues of losing her father because of the fact that she's Klingon. Mm-hmm. Well, at least that's what she chalks it up to.
And we come back to sickbay and Tom, and you know, now Tom, I think, feels like he can see what's going on. Mm-hmm. He reassures her, I'm never going to leave you. B'Elanna says, well, if you think it's hard living with one Klingon, pretty soon it's going to be two. Tom says, I hope it's three or four. I wrote down or 50 or 60. Why not? All of them.
He just that's very supportive of you, Tom,
but he was being supportive.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. I mean, what he's saying is, I don't care how many Klingons are in this family. I'm down with it. So, but Torres is not hearing this.
Yeah. And he turns her around. Beautiful moment. Roxanne, you were crying. Tears. It was very beautiful. And I like when Tom says, B'Elanna, I am not your father and you are not your mother.
Yeah.
And our daughter's going to be perfect just the way she is. It's a great lesson for all of us. All of us.
Is this the tear scene? This is the crying scene?
Yeah. Here? This is the end of it. That sequence. Mm-hmm. But it was that was a great reminder to me that, like, we are not our parents. They're part of us, but we're not them. And these childhood wounds and these things that we all experience, everybody's got their childhood wounding, but we don't have to just keep perpetuating it. Yeah. That we don't have to be to reenact it over and over in our relationships and hang on to it, that we can create our own life and our own experience. And it was a great way to kind of wrap up that story. And to me, in a weird way, it went from the medical ethics story and the racial stories and everything. It went back to that universal experience of childhood wounds and processing those in a healthy way so that we can grow and be something better and something different. That's the scene that did it for me.
Yeah.
It's great. We have a space shot, medical officer's log, stardate 544452.6. Lieutenant Torres has deleted these alterations. This is a doctor's log, medical officer's log. He says it's a relief to be back to my old self again. And our final scene is in sickbay. B'Elanna walks in to talk to the doctor. Great scene. She apologizes. I like his line, not guilty by reason of biochemistry. Kind of like mood swings. Like, you're not guilty. I get it. You got some big feelings. She says, it's not an excuse. I knew what I was doing. And she feels the baby kick for the first time, which was beautiful.
Yeah, that's a great moment. That's
really great moment.
Yeah.
And then she asked the doctor if he wants to feel the baby kick. And it's a beautiful moment. She asks him then, would he be the godfather? And she says, Neelix wants the job, but he's already got Naomi Wildman. And Chakotay knows less about raising kids than Harry, which I thought was funny.
What is all these cracks on Harry in this episode? What did Harry do to deserve this?
Well, Chakotay knows less than you, so.
Okay, so Chakotay's in worse position.
Yeah, he's in worse shape than you.
Fine, I'll take that. That's a win for me.
We bring up the holo projection one last time, and B'Elanna says, she is cute, isn't she? And there you go. End of episode.
Yeah. What is your lesson?
My lesson, I think I kind of said in that big scene with B'Elanna and Tom, that childhood trauma deeply affects us all, and how we respond to it is up to us. That's the lesson I took from this.
I think it was about, you know, so many things, but ultimately how we have the power to take our lives. This is what you said. You know, it's just that we have more control than we think we do. We aren't subject to the way we look or the way other people see us, is that we can actually step into a world of where we are not letting our parents and our past define who we are, that we can create our future. Mm. And that's probably the most important thing. But I think that even taking that to the next step, saying, you know, that a future with this kind of knowledge to be able to make these kinds of changes I just felt there was a big warning sign, a big red kind of flash warning sign. It's just because you can medically do these things, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, doesn't mean that you should.
What
are we saying about that? That's putting our own fears onto our children if we want to change them because we're afraid that they may go through what we went through. You know, and that's just a horrible, horrible start.
I'm going to say the lesson is, the traits or the things that make us unique are the things that make us beautiful. So our uniqueness is our beauty, is what I'm going to say.
That's great. I really like that.
Yeah.
Can it change mine now?
you may change it if you like, but I think you had a good one too. But if you want to add to it, you can.
I was rambling. That was very succinct. Very nice.
Okay, good. All right. I kind of said what you said in a small
All right. We also, Roxanne, we rate our episodes on a scale of 1 to 10.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to give my rating first. And then we also have a rating average from our Patreon captains and admirals. Yeah, our patrons. So we'll see how our ratings line up with their average rating.
And we have not looked at that admiral and captain's average rating yet. That's something that it's in an envelope. So here we go, Robbie. What is your rating for this episode, Lineage?
I am giving this episode, I really like this episode. And by the way, Roxanne, normally my criteria for a high rating is that it involves the whole crew, our whole crew, that everybody is involved in the story in a good way. And this one actually doesn't do that as well as most episodes, but I still give this a high rating because of the subject matter and the execution by everybody. I give it an 8.5. It's my rating.
Wow.
Yes, I do. I stand by it.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Okay, I'm going to go lower, but I'm still going to stay an 8. So 8.1.
Oh.
So I'm still a favorite. I like this episode, but I'm not going as high as you. Roxanne, would you have a give us a number?
Probably not, because I have nothing to compare it to. It's like I just watched it again today, and I'm not seeing all of them. So, this was, if not my favorite, one of my favorite to do as an actress, you know, I mean, and probably one of the ones that I'm really proud of. So
yeah, with the most character development by far of any episode that I've seen for Torres, right? I mean, really good. So
good character
work. So you're gonna abstain.
We'll abstain.
Okay. Robbie, what's the average rating between?
Okay, this week I'm pulling it up now. The average captain and admiral average rating for Lineage is 8.2. 8.2.
Oh, so in between ours then?
In between ours, still pretty high.
I almost nailed it. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So we were in the same zone. Everybody's thinking the same thing.
Gotcha.
Great. Well, that's our recap.
Robbie and I are so happy and excited to have you as our guest recapper. And we don't do this often, but we are so happy to have Roxanne here. So thank you so much once again, Roxanne. We are absolutely beside ourselves in having you join us today. So thank you once again for all your thoughts and your comments and your laughter and your your opinions.
Awesome. And Garrett, you still can't imitate me. I'm still the only one.
I know. This is the one thing Roxanne is so proud of, is that I do impersonations of everybody on Voyager except for her, because it's so difficult to do Roxanne's voice, because if she had a quirky, weird ass voice, I could imitate it, but she has a nice, really resonant, beautiful voice, which is very difficult to imitate because you have a normal voice. If you had if you talk like Bob Picardo, it's easy to impersonate Bob Picardo because he does this, he goes up and down. So that's how you,
there you go.
And if you have any luck, get Tuvok.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. So yeah, Tuvok. Yeah, that's Chakotay. So I always have a key phrase to get into my accents. And there was one episode where Chakotay turns to Tuvok and says, "Any luck, get Tuvok." So anytime I Yes.
Oh my God, that's so good.
When I get to that, that gets me into my tuba, my Chakotay voice.
So. But yeah, Roxanne does not have a thing. It's very neutral. It's very,
very, it's very Midwest newscaster. It's like the perfect accent, and it sucks because I can't impersonate it. I don't like that. I want Roxanne to have a weird twang to her voice or a little quirkiness, but she doesn't have it.
I'll work on that.
All right.
It's for you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
All right. Thank you, everyone, for tuning into our recap and discussion of Lineage with our wonderful guest recapper, Roxanne Dawson. And of course, join us next week when we will be recapping and discussing the episode Repentance. For all of our Patreon patrons, please stay tuned for your bonus material.